This is Alex Peace with Akil Patel, Urban Exposure's head of research, talking about his 18-year forecast for the UK property market. Akil, thank you very much for joining me. What exactly is your 18-year forecast, and what's that based off?
Well, it's based off a long-term repeating cycle that has been in operation in the UK and the US and other countries since about 1800. Whereby economies experience about 40 years of expansion and 4 years of economic recession, or fairly deep recession, and indeed sometimes depression. And it's most visibly seen in the property market, where you get relatively stable growth in house prices, leading to quite a significant boom, which then in turn leads to the bust, and during that bust you inevitably get a financial crisis, because you have a lot of overleveraged banks which have to then severely cut back lending, or indeed some cases getting bailed out by governments. And it's, funnily enough, it's a very clear repeating pattern that you can see by looking through history.
And you've looked back over I think it was the last 200 years roughly of British and American property prices basically to show that.
Absolutely. Obviously, the further back in time you go, the more patchy the data, and sometimes you're relying on qualitative data and descriptions of what was going on at the time. But yeah, there are a small number of researchers who've provided the evidence, and you can see the pattern quite clearly. Since before 1800 in the UK, and certainly since 1800 in the US, when the US started selling off its land after the Revolutionary War.
And the fallout of all of this is the forecast anyway is predicting a small recession in 2019, and then a very large one in 25, 26.
Yes. So typically, as I mentioned before, it's a 14-year period of expansion, which usually has a couple of halves, so roughly kind of 7 years each. And so the first half is, as I said, relatively stable, moderate growth in house prices and moderate GDP growth and so on. Then in the middle of the two halves, you typically have what I call a mid-cycle recession, which sets the way for the second half of the expansion, which typically is quite sort of can be quite significant, with a land boom and, you know, frenetic real estate activity and typically higher GDP growth, and certainly a lot of optimism and dynamism in the economy. And that kind of gets into a speculative peak and then comes crashing down. So I have dated the start of the cycle at around 2011, 2012, with the first half ending around 2019, when we should see a sort of a mid-cycle recession, which should set the way for a much bigger boom in the 2020s, peaking, if history is to repeat, in the same sort of time frame around 25 or 26.
Okay.
And then a period of significant recession after that.
Well, let's go through this with a fine-tooth comb on the actual graph. So you've got the current cycle you're saying started in roughly 2011, 2012. So that was sort of the bottom of the market,
yeah,
as it were. And
yes.
This is sort of referencing the UK market, I take it, or is this a global market?
Well, both the UK and the US, I wouldn't say it applies to every single country across the planet in quite the same way. But if certainly Western economies tend to follow the US into and out of every cycle. So the US maybe started in 2011 and the UK maybe started in 2012.
And what's driving this slow period of ascendancy then at the moment? Just generally return to economic confidence, economic growth?
Indeed, that's certainly how it starts. So I mean, if you recall from the news in 2012, we're still worrying about triple dip recession and you know, with London riots and things like that weren't that far in the memory. So, but there, you know, the property market did, you know, start to turn up in those years, and particularly 2013, a lot of buyers back in the market, able to access mortgages and so on. And that pushed things along. Now, it was mainly concentrated around London. So if you look at the UK market overall, it's been steady. It hasn't been spectacular, but albeit I appreciate that in certain parts of London, things have moved up quite quickly. But, you know, ultimately, bank lending is relatively conservative. people are still worried about the sorts of behaviours that got us into the mess in the previous cycle peak in around 2007. And so that tends to keep a fairly strong lid on, you know, excessive market behaviour.
Mm-hmm. And but this sort of slowly moves up and up and up. So what, we're in 2017 now, and this is lending's become more available. The mortgage market has become increasingly flexible as new entrants have come in, and existing players have found that they have to actually get rid of lend off their books. And also, we're seeing regional growth expand outside of London.
Yeah, exactly. So there's kind of steady recovery, and now we're starting to, as you absolutely right, you know, lending across the economy is starting to expand. A good signal at this stage that credit markets are going to become a bit more open is when interest rates actually start to rise. You know, yields are starting to push up, and that brings a few more players into the market. You have a number of challenger banks entering the market, trying to grab market share in the mortgage market. And so there is quite a bit of competition, I think, now starting competing for mortgages and so on. So that keeps the impact of any rising rates, I think, will be limited. Regional growth outside London, in fact, some of the regions outside London are growing faster, and I expect that to continue for the next couple of years at least. And also governments are actively talking about fiscal stimulus. So infrastructure expenditure in the US, Eurozone, London, and London, UK, which, you know, contributes to a, more of a construction boom. And I think we'll see some of that play out over the next couple of years.
Right up until 2019, when you're forecasting a sort of minor dip, and you've got Brexit on your graph. But I mean, is that actually caused by Brexit, or is that caused more just by this stage in the cycle?
No, that's really quite interesting. I'd already forecast 2019 as the end of this first phase of the cycle, and there's nothing I've seen so far that makes me think that this time will be any different. It just so happens that Brexit will be coincident with that. And, some of the kind of behaviors post-Brexit by market participants might lead to a pause in the market, et cetera. I think some people might well put two and two together and get five and say, well, look, the market's dipping and that's because of Brexit. But actually, it's the general way of things that you do have periods of contraction in an economy through this fairly regular rhythm in economic activity. And so Brexit will be part of that, but it won't be the driver.
What will be pushing prices down in 2019, and what will cause that blip, as it were?
Well, typically, the final stages of any bull market, you tend to find, as economic activity is expanding, that you get higher inflation and so on. And so governments start to raise interest rates. And at some point, raising interest rates can, have run the risk of tipping an economy over back into recession, particularly if inflation runs away for a couple of quarters. And so historically, that has been one of the primary causes of the recession coming in. Or sometimes it may be, to a certain extent, also combined with a bit of an external shock.
Mm-hmm. Such as Brexit.
Or it may be, such as Brexit, yeah, absolutely. But it's not, I think preceding Brexit, you'll see a construction boom across the Western world, at least. And, even China's talking about that and talking about construction boom in Central Asia. So you'll see quite positive signs. You're already seeing an uptick in inflation in a number of different markets. Oil price rises will play into that. You're starting to see a bit of strength in the oil market, etc. So there are a combination of factors that come together that can sometimes, push things down again.
And
a lot of it isn't
Carry on.
Yeah. No, so the final thing is it's not necessarily driven entirely by domestic factors. I mean, if the US has a pause, then, it's going to affect other countries in the world, because the US's size in the global economy is much larger than most countries.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, by 2020, we're moving onwards and upwards yet again. And this is where things start to get properly interesting. And we're getting into the next sort of 7-year patch, which is the proper boom, as it were. So I mean, this is governments using infrastructure spending again to sort of ward off any kind, anything from the sort of mini recession, as it were.
I mean, first of all, it'll probably be looser monetary policy than in the couple of years prior to the peak. And I mean, UK might, you know, that might be to do with Brexit, looser monetary policy, but it sets the stage for the next half of the cycle. Next half of the cycle is typically characterized by a huge amount of expenditure for public works or infrastructure, much easier bank lending. So banks will well and truly have put the last financial crisis behind them, and credit's much more available for households and for, you know, property development and for people, for mortgages, and for people to buy houses, etc. And that, you know, whenever bank lending is looser, you inevitably get economic growth. And so that pushes the economy up. With a lot of construction and infrastructure, you get rising commodity prices, which is certainly bullish for a lot of commodity producing nations, which obviously puts more money into the world economy, etc. As I'm also expecting to see a commodities boom during that period, in the same way that we saw in the 2000s
as well. After by about what period this must be? This must be 2024 FTSE 100. Commodities boom.
I sort of put that in there to show that it, you know, because people might think it may never happen, partly because when I created the slide, we just had the referendum. But actually, at some point, fairly soon, actually, it may even be this half of the cycle, but certainly sometime next half of the cycle, FTSE will pass 10,000, and that will probably create quite a bit of a splash, since obviously we've never been anywhere close to that. Mm-hmm. And that will bring a lot more money into the market, I can tell you. Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the sort of the really big spike in the last couple of years. So this is what, looking at 2023, 2024, really driving the market yet again. That's rising interest rates, you've got to try and slow that, but at the same time,
well, firstly, it's the era of, I call it the era of very easy money. So banks really looking for opportunities to lend, and, you know, all the kind of things that we saw during the last cycle. I think there'll be many more players in the market, many more different sources of finance, domestically and also potentially internationally. With all of the other things, the economic boom, the rising commodity prices, etc., at some point inflation starts to tick up, as I mentioned it would do for the first half of the cycle as well, towards the end of it. And therefore, governments will start to raise interest rates. And at some point, it will, you know, the market can no longer bear that. And then typically you find there's some kind of trigger event or series of events that causes people to firstly to pause, and then suddenly you tend to find that everyone heads to the exit at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And of course the most indicative of these things will be the new tallest building in the world will be, or in that particular region will be, potentially built.
Yes, exactly. It's a fantastic indicator because it combines the optimism of a runaway bull market combined with very high land values. And in fact, it's speculation in land which drives a lot of the boom, and also very easy money because you need to find financing to build such a thing. And so the business case and the financing and perhaps even the construction is all in place and has started prior to the peak of the cycle typically. But when the construction is completed, it's usually in the middle of a recession. So we saw that with the Burj Khalifa and the Shard in the last cycle. The one before that, it was, you know, for example, in the UK, One Canada Square and Canary Wharf. And the cycle before that, say the US, the Sears Tower, and so on. It's almost an infallible indicator of a cycle that's gone too far.
Great stuff. Not great stuff, I suppose. I'm pretty bad stuff. So then by 2026, then it all goes wrong, and we sort of reset ourselves to 2009, 2010 levels of austerity and whatnot.
Sometimes the measures can be different. For example, the US didn't really pursue a policy of austerity this time around, which you could argue is one of the reasons why they seem to move away from the prior crisis more quickly than, say, the Eurozone or the UK. So it's not a given what governments will do, but it doesn't look great. And, you know, the cost of bailing out banks that are domiciled in your territory can be very significant. And that is usually loaded onto taxpayers. And so, therefore, you know, public policy expenditure has to adapt as a result. So, and, you know, in addition to that, there's always falling tax revenues because there's higher unemployment and general loss of confidence, limited bank lending, which means that economic growth is not really there, etc. So, you know, as we saw in 2009 onwards, it wasn't, you know, a great time to be an investor. But if you have the ability to, you know, if you have a source of finance or you're sitting on a lot of cash, you know, that's when you find the really generation events for finding great deals.
Mm-hmm. I guess this is what everyone always says, but, you know, are you sure it's going to happen this time around? Things are very different this time. There's new systems of regulation and measurement, awareness. We're in a very global economy now. I mean, even compared to how we were in 2007, 2008, things are very, very different. What's your sort of answer to that?
Well, the difference between the economy in the UK and the US in 1800 and even 1900, and between 1900 and sort of 1950, and then from 1950 to 1980, I mean, they're really different periods, and yet we seem to find this historical pattern, and we seem incapable of seeing it coming and learning the lessons, at least on a general scale. So that would be my first answer. It's of course possible that this time around it could be different, but it would be the first time in 200 years. And, you know, one of the things that I try and do with my research is to actually put out, you know, fairly clear forecasts and then try and get people to tell me, well, actually, this is why it's not going to happen. And then, you know, test how things do transpire in relation to actual events. What I would say is that since 2011, 12, despite the fact it is a much more globalized economy, as you rightly point out, things have been moving in a very consistent way to the way fundamentally they've moved in previous cycles. I think part of it is because fundamentally it's the economic incentive to put your capital in kind of markets, principally property, where, you know, things do go up and they go up as economies develop. And so it draws in finance and capital and bank lending and so on. And it sort of, you know, ultimately results in going over the top. That fundamental cause has not really changed, and I don't see that changing this time around either.
We are creatures of habit. Akil, thank you very much for your time.
Not at all. My pleasure.